Hello, everyone. Today we are going to be talking about being your own boss as an artist. But first, if your studio habits need a kick in the butt, Art Prof has everything you need: tutorials, critiques, and professional development. So, Clara, what is it like to be your own boss? What do you need to do?
It's more like, what do you not do? Which is pretty much you do everything. You're a one artist business. And while we're going to talk about some of the nuts and bolts of how to be organized and different strategies, I really think being an artist in terms of the business side of it, it's a mindset you have to have. Jordan, how would you explain that mindset?
It's one that I think a lot of artists struggle with at first, because generally, you know, we just want to deal with the creative stuff. We want to do the cool drawings and the cool paintings and the sculptures and all that stuff. And being a business person, you have to start thinking analytically and start thinking about, how do I move forward as an individual so I can keep myself afloat? And so it's like an entirely different part of your brain that you're using when you're trying to activate this business.
And there's a learning curve. Most people do not know how to do this stuff. I mean, Lauren, how long did it take for you to feel like you had a grip on being a one artist business?
I still don't have a grip, Clara. There's still things that I struggle with. For anyone out there that wanted to hire me, I'll just be very transparent about it. I think that that's kind of the case for every artist, business artist, though. There are things that you understand really well, and then there are other things maybe that you are always working on to try to get a better grip on. Some artists are really good at maybe pricing their work, and other artists are good at communicating and making their client feel special. These are all different skills.
And actually, Mia Rozier, who just pulled off this successful Kickstarter campaign, told me that she really learned a lot that, wow, if I don't do it, it's just not going to happen. And you find yourself doing just the most menial tasks, but you realize that they're actually really important. So, Jordan, what do we mean by saying that you have to treat your business like it's your day job?
So when you go into work, you know, you start at a certain time, you might answer some emails, you have a set schedule. There's certain things that you have to fulfill by the end of the day, and you have to treat your personal business the same way, that with the same professionalism as you would anywhere else. If you don't have a high standard for your own business, then I don't know if anyone else is going to look at it the same way either.
Dara is asking, in the US, can you just make art for money, or do you have to register yourself as a business or company? You don't. You can basically do self-employment on your income tax, and you end up filing a Schedule C. Now, you don't have to set up an LLC. That's really not necessary. And I think that for your average individual artist, you can just do Schedule C, and that's totally fine. All right, Lauren, how about this? Setting specific work hours and days to do the business stuff. Why does this matter?
Again, it goes back to the treating your business, art business, as a day job, as Jordan was talking about. If you don't have the hours, then you end up pushing it to the side and treating it more like a hobby that you eventually get around to, maybe sometimes. And you really can't treat it that way. You have to be very consistent about it, or your clients are not going to treat you seriously. The galleries aren't going to treat you seriously. You just need to be there and show up all the time so you can gain some momentum and also get more practice.
I have found it necessary, because if I don't set specific days and hours, I will just work all the time. Because I'm a workaholic. I can't help myself. But I have rules now. I say, after I finish the weekend live stream, I don't do any Art Prof work. I go for a hike. I take care of my kids. I finish watching Avatar: The Last Airbender, which we did last week. Jordan is so proud of me. But you need that separation, because you can start to go crazy when you don't make those boundaries. Like, have you experienced that, Jordan?
You just named like the last 12 months of my life, basically. yeah, it happens all the time, because I also am a workaholic, and I struggle with setting certain boundaries. And especially, I found it really tough for me because I've been in school for most of my life. I've been, you know, going to class at such time, doing homework and doing this and that. And without a schedule to keep me grounded, I will lose track. I will not respond to you. And not even on purpose. It's just, I can't keep track of all that stuff the same way that I would like to.
Actually, this is so crazy that you guys are saying this because I hadn't even really thought of this up until this point. It reminded me of, I wasn't even thinking about keeping boundaries. Basically, my regular life is also my art life, is my business life. But it does remind me when one time one of my bosses said, hey, you look really burnt out. You should go do something that's not art related at all, because that's all you do. Go to a baseball game, go for a walk, that kind of stuff. So it is important. You're totally right. Thank you for bringing that up.
Kesem says, do you need to have some kind of following on Instagram, for example, to start your business? If you don't have a following, is it too risky? Actually, I was going to say, it's much less of a risk to do anything when you don't have a following, because nobody's paying attention. Like, we actually have a pretty substantial following here at ArtProf now. And while we are experimenting and trying new things, people are paying attention to us. I was like, wow, people are noticing when I have a typo. And when you don't have a following, you have that freedom because people are not paying a lot of attention. So I would say that's actually the best time to start a business, is when people don't know you that well. All right, keep a paper trail. Jordan, why is this important if you are an artist running a business?
Well, just like you will buy something and you need a receipt for it, you need that same thing for your businesses. There are going to be experiences that you have. There's going to be things that you charge people, or maybe there's a misunderstanding in what the charge was in the particular art project. And so you need to have backup. You need to be able to go to a place and say, this is what it was. And just to keep track of all that stuff. It's hard to keep all that in your head.
I've got two stories with this. The first is maybe a US American specific story. My dad, who's an artist, was audited. And so you need those receipts in order to prove that you're doing all the things above board and you're really recording all the expenses and all the income that you're getting. So that's one reason. You never know if you're going to be audited or not. Doesn't matter if you have money or not. The second thing is, as Jordan said, I know plenty of friends, I've been in this situation myself. If you don't have a paper trail of communications with someone, you don't know if those communications are always going to go great. You might have a disagreement with someone. So you really need to have that backup to say, hey, this happened. We agreed on this. You need to stay with this plan. Otherwise, you can really be taken advantage of.
And it's easy to make mistakes on this stuff. I mean, I sent an invoice this week and I sent the wrong amount, not because I was trying to get extra money, but because I just wrote the wrong amount. And so the vendor wrote back and they said, this is incorrect. Here's the contract. That's the correct amount. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm such an idiot. But it happens. And so for everybody's sake, you got to keep all of that stuff available. Let's talk about reputation. As a business owner and as an artist, I think this has many versions, but I think especially because online life has become a lot more prominent, there's more stuff to think about now. So Jordan, what do we mean by reputation as a professional?
Yeah, so there's a certain, when you introduce yourself to someone or when you're trying to start a business, there's a certain image that you're putting out there. There's a certain, you know, impression that people will have of you. And if you're trying to start a business, you want that impression to be good. You want people to like you. You want people to like what you have to offer. And if you are putting something out there that might be questionable or might cause people to have the wrong idea of you or who you are as a person, you don't want that to hinder your business.
And this has been happening a lot. I think the editor that they had just hired for Teen Vogue lost their job before they even started it because people unearthed these racist tweets that they had done when they were in high school. And so I just would say, when you're running a business, obviously you're going to be posting a lot of things online. You have to be very conscious that some of that might come back to haunt you at some point. And it's hard because depending on your age, maybe you were posting stuff when you were 13. I was not. There was no internet when I was 13. But be careful about this. Lauren, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those people that started posting when I was 13 on message boards, and now I'm 30, and I'm a very, very different person from when I was 13. Absolutely horrified by anything that my 13-year-old self liked. And so in that case, I didn't know I was going to grow up and be a fancy artist. I didn't know I was going to run a business. So in that case, if you are a millennial like me, it is important to keep a record or do some real digging. Spend a weekend or a week going through all of your old things where you've signed up their programs to see where your username and password are, and really clean up your digital trail so that your 13-year-old self doesn't come back and haunt you.
Lisa says everything online stays forever. And that includes stuff on your phone. I mean, people have leaked stuff to the New York Times. I think it was Ted Cruz's wife's friend's text messages made it to the New York Times. So you never know. And Blue Wolf says you never get a second chance to make a first impression. Absolutely. Also, having a website, in addition to, you should have one anyway, as a professional artist, I use it as like my own library. Like, Jordan, have you ever thought to yourself, oh man, what year did I make that piece? And then looked it up on your own website?
Instagram. I've done it with Instagram. I don't have my own website specifically. I have a profile on ArtStation, so I'll use that. But I think it would come in handy, especially for seeing your own growth, if anything. You know, I think that oftentimes when we are running our business and we're just going with the day-to-day life, we forget where we came from and how much we've grown. And outside of all the other reasons to have a website, that is one really key thing that I think is super important.
Lauren, have you used your website in that way in terms of seeing growth or just what year did I do that piece?
I mean, I have all the stuff really hyper arranged in a folder on my computer. So I mostly refer to those folders, but I do use the website as a reference for other people, specifically when they're either asking about maybe purchasing a piece or they are asking about commission or anything like that. You can refer them over there instead of trying to dig deep and answer all their questions.
I want to give a shout out to Angie S. Thank you so much for the super sticker. Everybody, your contributions are so incredibly helpful to us to keep Art Prof up and running. So we greatly appreciate that. Organize your web browser. I don't know if I'm the only dork that does this, but I am really addicted to my web browser and I'm really specific about it. So here's an example. When I open my web browser, I use Chrome. It automatically opens four particular sites. It opens YouTube comments, Discord, Art Prof posts, which are submissions that we get, and also my calendar. It's a really small thing, but it reminds me to go through all of those things, and I don't have to think about it. Lauren, do you do anything like this?
Nope, not at all. I mean, I have the websites that I need to visit because I work remotely. All my jobs are remote. So I have those bookmarked and saved in places, but I don't go through this hyper crazy opening everything at once. That would be very stressful for me.
Jordan, do you do this? Maybe I'm crazy.
No, I'm like my birthday twin. For those who are new, Jordan, I have the same birthday, January 18th. But no, I just have bookmarks and I'll have stuff written, like a little I have post-it notes. That's what I do. I have post-it notes everywhere.
That's so you guys cute. Don't have browser links like this? You don't have those?
No.
In my bookmarks, but I don't like check them every day. Usually most of the stuff I need is in my email. So I just have to check my email.
See, I'm really uptight about my email. If there's more than four emails, I feel like my head's going to explode.
I just heard of this phrase, overbuilding. A sculptor overbuilds. They make it too sturdy, build too many things. Clara, I think you're an overlister. You make lists. You make too many lists. Too many categories.
Well, let's take a look at your computer folders and let's see who's the dork now. Right, Lauren?
I think this is very organized. I only have like 4 folders on my desktop, and then all my folders are inside those 4 folders. So this is my business folder. This is my whole art life / art job life in it. And I find it very useful. And one thing in my life is organized. It is this folder.
Well, Dara says, I have about 60 tabs open right now. Angie says, I'm a post-it noter. Darwin says, I like to hoard tabs. And Lucia says, 62 tabs open right now. Okay, you're all making me feel less insane.
Wow.
The tabs thing kills me. It feels like a messy room. I can't focus if there are so many tabs that are waiting there. It makes me scared.
Jordan, how about your client list?
I just separate it out by year, and then the projects are in there, and it just helps me. If it's an ongoing client, like right here, it's Lightbearer's Mission, I will just have it in one big folder because I've been doing stuff for them for a couple of years now. So it helps me stay organized. It's simple. There's very few folders, and I can go on about my day and remain sane.
All right. This is a mindset that I think is really healthy to treat your gigs like it's your first gig ever. Why do you think this is helpful, Jordan? Because I know this is an idea that you have been using for a long time.
Yeah, so actually I first heard about this concept on a song by Jay-Z, believe it or not, and he took a sample of another rapper named Biggie Smalls or Notorious B.I.G., and he said that whenever he creates a song or an album, he treats it like it's his first project, like he's an intern. And if you've ever been an intern, if you ever had your first job in high school, you always want to do your best. You're always trying to go above and beyond. And a lot of people tend to lose that later on. You go 5 years down the line, they're like, I can be lazy on this, I can skimp on that. But if you can remain humble and still have the same quality of work, or better yet, even improve your quality of work, it's going to be so much better for you in the long run, because people will be able to depend on you and people will know this artist delivers quality work and they're always really great to work with.
It's easy to rest on your laurels once you've gotten a few years of experience under your belt and say, yeah, I got this covered. And then you start to realize, you know what, maybe I do have it covered, but could I just push myself a little bit more? Let's just make it a little bit better. It doesn't have to be a mega big change, but I think somebody actually posted, I think it was Tom G in the Discord, they were saying, wow, I haven't been around ArtProf for that long, but you guys have changed so much. And I think one of the reasons why is because we do have that mindset, is it can always be better. How can I do that? How about you, Lauren?
I agree with that. I mean, again, I agree with you guys. My position is slightly different. I am in a place where I just feel insecure all the time, have imposter syndrome all the time about where I'm at, and that I'm never up to the level of anyone else. So I'm always striving to be better. I don't really recommend this mindset. I think the being secure in yourself, but also being really honest and being really close to your clients and having high quality of work is important, but sometimes feeling that imposter syndrome is helpful for a certain level of motivation.
I like this comment from Trent, who says 1% improvement a day adds up. Yeah, because it's too stressful to feel that you have to make strides. I mean, just tweak it a little here and there is totally sufficient. Okay, spreadsheets and docs. This is my territory. Jordan, do you like spreadsheets and docs?
I appreciate them. I do not make them very much. it can be overwhelming for me personally.
Lauren, how about you?
The only thing I use Google Docs for is putting together my things for critiques and for lectures. I don't keep any of my business stuff on there, really. I keep all of that on my computer. I just feel weird about keeping it on the cloud for some reason. I'd rather have it a hard drive.
I'm obsessed with Google Docs, and this is my life, Control F, trying to find that one link to that one video that this person in the Discord needs. It's what I rely on. And not only that, but it's easy for me to share that content with somebody if they need to see it. And I'm on the phone app all the time, especially when I have images, I want to put them on Instagram. I just find Google Docs extremely valuable for that reason. Do you guys want to see how much work the live stream schedule is? This is the spreadsheet, and this is after we have figured everything out. This is the neat version of the live stream schedule. It's a lot of moving pieces. I know it looks like we just show up here every day and start talking, but it's kind of a lot of work. Jordan, would you say that's accurate?
Yes, that's pretty accurate. And even like seeing this this spreadsheet here all clean and stuff, I'm like, whoa, that's so much nice. Cause I actually hadn't seen it before. And I'm like, well, this is so nice compared to all the stuff that we have to deal with during the middle of the week.
Oh man. Again, you are an over lister, Clara. When I've been to your house, I just see you pull out another hard drive and another hard drive and another hard drive, and they each have different lists on them. And the lists, I don't even know what they're for. They're just very complicated and very long. And I know it's a logic for you, and I like that for you. I love that for you. But that's like, I feel I'm somewhere between Jordan and you on this. Right in the middle.
Well, I guess what we're trying to say, there's a range of how to run your business. And obviously ArtProf's a little different because I am managing a staff and multiple people. But the concept is the same, that you want to keep your tracks covered, especially who has paid. Jordan, why does this matter so much?
You want your money. Like, if you're working on something for 20, 30 hours or whatever, I would want to get my money, like just straight up, like not even trying to be, be a certain way. But realistically, it is a business. It's a transaction. You know, you promise you're going to deliver a certain product, and in return, you get paid. And so I think it's totally fair to keep track. I do this. I do that. Yeah.
I'm so antiquated on this. Can you believe I keep paper, like actual paper printout of anything that all of my contracts where I'm owed, and they're in a folder. On the one side of the folder are things that need to be paid or people need to pay me, and on the other side are the ones that have like gone through already.
Well, I find this especially important because there's so many times that I've done a lecture or a workshop and then people just never paid me. Like a couple months ago, I emailed this place, I did a lecture for them, and I was like, you know, you never sent me the payment. And then they wrote back, they're like, oh, I don't know why that never happened. I'm like, that happens so often. People are just spaced out. Like, you have to hunt people down sometimes to get paid. It's not always assumed it's gonna happen on time. Have you had trouble getting paid, Jordan?
Yes and no. So no, I've been paid by everyone who said they were going to pay me, but I do need to send out a reminder. And what I'll do is I'll put something on the invoice and they'll say, if you don't pay me in 30 days, then I'm going to charge extra by this percentage. And I'll let them know like a week in advance, like, hey, remember that thing you had me work like 30 hours on? So I need to eat and I need to eat and I have light bills. I have light bill to pay. So help me out. And then they'll be usually are like, oh, I'm so sorry. And they'll send it right over. That's about as bad as it gets for me.
And it's also tricky, though, because sometimes it takes me months to get paid. Like I've done lectures, took me 4 months to get the check. And so you don't always keep track of it that easily unless you have a spreadsheet like this to make sure you get all that. And I do the same thing for my taxes. So people had asked earlier about, oh, do you need to make an LLC to sell your artwork? You don't. You just do self-employment, Schedule C. But what you do is you track your expenses so that way you can deduct them. So it's like materials, commissions and fees, travel, business and entertainment expenses, all those things. And I do it throughout the year. I add it every single time I buy something. So that way I don't go insane, you know, on April 14th in the US trying to get everything done.
Although if you are a person that just doesn't have the forethought for this, and that is most of us, my roommate taught me a very cool trick where you can just look at all of the expenses on your credit or debit card and pick out the ones that are, say, Blick or Postal Service or check from so-and-so. And I have used that as a way to double check all of the expenses that I do have to make sure that everything is there as it's supposed to be.
All right. What does this mean, Jordan? Customer is always right. I'm sure a lot of us have heard this before, but how does this apply to artists?
Usually for me, there's oftentimes clients who want something specific that may not always, at least for me, may not always be in the best taste, at least from an artistic mindset. I'm thinking like, well, this doesn't fit with that. And at a certain point, it's like, just let it go, Jordan. Just let it go. Give them what they asked for, even if you don't care for it as much. Just get it done, because ultimately they are paying you for a service. Like let's say I used to work at Jamba Juice, right? Let's say someone ordered a smoothie that had like some of the weirdest things in it. Like, let's say they want like, you know, all these different sherbets and all and different weird fruits and like granola and like just a weird mix of stuff. Just because I don't personally think I would order that doesn't mean that they shouldn't get what they asked for. So you gotta treat it like that. And you could just say it's nasty afterwards, but
you know. Neil is asking, have you experienced customers yell at you or clients? Have you had that? Anybody have a meltdown in front of you, Lauren?
I've definitely had. I was burned by this so hard. I think I brought this up before in Art Prof. When I was 20 or something, I had a person from high school ask for a commission. She gave me really, really, really crappy photos. And then I did a lot of research and put together a wonderful drawing, undercharged for it. And she said, I didn't want you to do this. I want you to use exactly those photos. And you didn't do it. I want my money back. I don't want this. And I was like, the photos were 8-bit. They were terrible. They were so bad.
I had somebody I did a portrait commission of who yelled at me after a drawing session, and they said, how dare you draw me like that? All I can see is my mortality, and you're showing that I had skin cancer, and why would you? I was like, whoa, I didn't try or know, but she had a total meltdown, and I was like, oh my, I was like traumatized. I was like 23. I was so young. And an experience, I just like did not know what to do. It was horrible. So yeah, you guys may have to do that at some point. Seven Angelic says, in terms of paperwork, is there a checklist you'd recommend? Jordan, any thoughts?
Just things I keep track of is like when they ask for the artwork, you know, when it's due, you know, how much you're getting paid, who the client is, like their contact info, just simple things like that. I found work for me, but I tend to only work with like individuals. It's never really a big company. So if it's a beer company, I might have more on the list.
All right, let's talk more about lists. Lauren, you and I have both read this book by Atul Gawande, who is a surgeon in Boston. And I love all his books. I mean, I am not a good reader, and I devoured every book he's read. He wrote this book called The Checklist Manifesto. What does he explain in this book?
The Checklist Manifesto is super useful. If you want to hear more about it without reading it, there is a podcast on Hidden Brain about it, about checklists and this book specifically. What it basically says is that people, especially very people with high expertise in a certain area, really need to have checklists because we're all human. We all make mistakes, and checklists, even though they feel redundant, help keep you to task and make sure that you're not forgetting, making any silly mistakes, and really running through everything perfectly. And surgeons use these, pilots use these, truckers use these, all different people use these. I have to use this in the wood shop when I'm learning how to use a new tool. We use this for Art Prof, crazy for Art Prof. And it helps things go smoothly because it's better just go over a redundant checklist than it is to make a mistake and then have to somehow fix it later.
I mean, we have so many various programs here at ArtProf. We have so many different types of streams. There's a different tech setup for every stream. This is my handwritten list for our Patreon voice sessions because there's a lot of moving pieces. Like, Jordan, does it help you to have this checklist when you do a Patreon voice session in the Discord?
Yes, it does. I have two screens. So one, I have the Discord open. The other, I look over to my screen. I see that checklist and I'm like, okay, bam, 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 bam. And it's so much nicer.
For example, we have reminders for Lauren and Jordan and myself. Things that we try to remind ourselves of. We say this ourselves before the stream, we need to talk slower. We need to avoid our filler words. We need to not monologue. I'm the worst person in terms of that little sin. But I think that these little reminders, they keep me sane because I actually don't have to think as much because I know it's there and I just go, oh, I open Chrome. I open StreamYard. Do you find them helpful, Lauren?
Yeah, I think that there is a difference, Clara, between knowing these things. So we know not to use filler words. We know not to have monologues. We understand this intellectually. But what having that reminder does is it brings it to the forefront, to our conscious brain, so that we are actively checking ourselves for these things as we speak. It kind of turns on our brains. And I think that's what's important.
Shaim says, what is the worst thing a client can or has done? Do you have a nightmare story for us, Jordan?
Yeah, I could tell the story. Forgive me, it's a little long. But basically what happened was I have a friend whose sister was a fashion designer and found some project on Upwork. And this person wanted some characters for their graphic novel or just their novel, right? And so she said, hey, Jordan, can you draw the characters and I'll just draw the clothes on top? I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. We were just going to split the funds that way. And the guy just lists out all the characters and tells us things that aren't really necessary. Like, Jamie's in love with Tyler, but Tyler doesn't know it yet. And then, like, and, like, Paula loves unicorns. And, like, and then I was like, this is so, like, what do I need this for? And then it got worse. I looked down, and this guy, I don't remember his name at all. But he he ranked all the female characters who were teenagers, the young adult novel, by the size of their boobs. And these are like 14-year-old characters in the book. And then he did the same thing with the size of their butts, right? And so I'm looking at this, and I'm like, I was so confused. And I started thinking, like, wait, this isn't a graphic novel. It's not a comic book. And I was like, why does he need this? Like, it's just a regular young adult. Not like, why does he even need my art for this? I really didn't understand. And so I started asking questions, and then he just stopped communication with both of us. So it was really creepy. It was really awkward. I don't know if he ever got
the most offensive request I've ever gotten was I had a company in China. It was one of those portfolio prep schools. They have a lot of them in China. And they said, hi, you did some portfolio critiques for some of our students. Can you please write them a letter of reference for college? And I said, oh, well, I don't do that. I'm sorry. I have a personal policy that to give a letter of reference, it has to be somebody who's been in an in-person class with me and has received a grade, like completed an actual course. And they said, oh, but we'll pay you. And I was like, that's so unethical. Like, as a professor, you're not supposed to be compensated for letters of reference. That's just part of your job. And I was so angry. I wrote to them, never write to me again. This is unethical. I cannot believe you asked me to do this. I mean, I was furious. So yeah, there's some not cool people out there, in my opinion. Lauren, what do we mean by don't undersell yourself?
Underselling yourself is when you price your works and your labor at below what you are actually worth. And now that's kind of complicated, right? Because that can depend on your geographical location. It can depend on what niche of the art world you're in or what level of the art world you're in. But really, there's a system for each of these things. And you don't want to do work for free unless it's something that's super close to you, because not only is that not respecting your boundaries and time and labor as an artist, it is also teaching that person that asked you this that they can just ask anybody to do stuff for free and to expect that. So, I mean, this is also for having really low wages for yourself too. You want to price your things appropriately. So just remember that you're not only pricing stuff for yourself, you're also pricing it for all the other artists out there in the world.
Jordan, have you ever had a situation where you thought, oh man, I totally should have charged more? Has that happened?
Oh yeah. There was one time, maybe about a year or so ago, this guy wanted me to do some character design. And it was at that point, it was the biggest project that someone had asked me to do. And he was like, so how much do you charge? And I got so excited, I named a price. And he was like, oh, I thought you were going to charge more. And I was like, crap. I don't know how much more I could have gone, but at that moment I knew. I was like, okay, next time I gotta find a different system around that.
Starving Artist says, I did that when I started out, so undervalued my time and training. I get why, because when you don't have a lot of experience, you want to have that job and you feel that, oh, if I ask for too much, I'm just not gonna get it, which feels even worse. But really, I think it's just going through a lot of situations and you start to learn after a while, oh, that does not feel good. All right, Lauren, what do we mean by it's okay to say no to a gig?
So sometimes you're going to get people asking you to do things that maybe you don't feel comfortable doing. You either don't feel jazzed about the subject matter, you don't have time, that's really common, or maybe it's just you're not comfortable with that particular material. All these things are valid, and you can absolutely say, no, I can't do this, or I don't have the capacity to do this. And oftentimes it can feel less guilty for you. Sometimes people have this guilt complex with saying no. If you refer them onto another artist, leave a pathway open for them. Say, hey, you can ask this person. I've got lots of artist friends. I'd love to direct them towards a good gig that might make them a little money or a good client relationship.
Jordan, why do you think this is so hard for a lot of artists? Because I've had students say to me, oh, I don't want to do that. I feel really bad. I feel like that's really mean to say no.
I think for artists, it's like I said at the beginning, there's a certain switch that you have to make as a business person and as an artist. With the artist side, you're just trying to think of creatively. But on the business side, that's usually underdeveloped. And so a lot of people will probably feel guilty because they're like, well, aren't I supposed to take on everything? Don't I need to get the experience? Don't I need to get these clients built up and build relationships with people? And you know, any number of reasons. I've said all of those to myself at different times, but I think what's gonna end up happening in those situations to a lot of young artists is they're going to start getting sick and tired of it. And they're just gonna be like, you know what? No, I don't want to do your freaking logo. Like, just no. I don't care about your, you know. And
it's always a logo.
It's always a logo. I've never
or a tattoo.
I have never advertised myself to be able to do logos or tattoos, but for some reason, I always get those messages. Or the worst one is I'll get, are you a graphic artist? I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Like, what is a graphic artist? Like that, I can't figure that. I don't even know what that means. Do you know? And so, yeah, those are really tricky. But I think with more experience and more just realizing what makes you kind of frustrated, like, I don't feel like doing this, it's going to get a lot easier with time.
It is hard to say no. And it does take a couple years of experience to feel that you're not like missing out on something, because I'm at a point in my life now where I just get so many requests that I spend so much time saying no now, but it takes a while to get there. And it is awkward for a lot of people to put your foot down and say that. I want to give a shout out to RB Dick. Thank you so much for the super sticker. We greatly appreciate your support, which really helps us stay up and running. All right, here's another example of crazy Clara and her crazy lists and calendars. So what I do on my Google Calendar, which I am glued to pretty much all day, is I set up recurring calendar events for things like grant deadlines, because there's a lot of artist grants out there. The deadline is always June 15th, or it's around April. And so I'll just put a reminder to myself the month before, okay, check the Guggenheim application grant to remind myself to do that, because it's easy to forget this stuff. Do you have anything similar, Lauren? Because I know you applied to grants too.
Yes, I don't put it on my calendar though, because my calendar looks really scary as it is with all of my jobs in school. So I put them in this app called Todoist. I love Todoist. It's a to-do list and it comes complete with deadlines. And so all these grant type things, I will put in a project and then say deadline, Guggenheim grant, and I can break it down into steps and add those steps that I need to do. That's more actionable for me.
Jazz is saying, where do you find artist grants? We actually have a listing of many artist grants on our art resources page. If you go to the top, there's just a little section that says artist grants. Just click on that. It'll take you to all these links. There's a lot of websites out there that list them, but honestly, a lot of them are out of date or they're not very comprehensive. I think ours is pretty good, so check it out when you can. All right. This is very important. A lot of people don't realize that they should even do this, which is to be specific about what you will or won't do. Now, Jordan, we have an example here with your commissions chart, and you are very specific about it. So can you explain why this matters?
Yeah. First of all, you know, there are just certain things that are either too time consuming for the price that I'm charging, or it just makes me uncomfortable or whatever the case is. And I just don't want to do it. So I remember one time someone asked me to do a portrait of their significant other. And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, it's this price. And then they're like, do you mind if they're naked? And I was like, wait, what? And now for me, first of all, I've done figure drawing. You guys know me by now. Seeing the nude figure is not really an issue for me, but the fact that it was this person's, like, you know, girlfriend and they're just asking some random artist on Instagram and, like, there's just a lot of layers to it. And I was like, yeah, bro, this qualifies under NSFW. I'm not doing that. I just don't even want any part of this.
Jordan, we have a commission request from Soytonly who says, can I get a wet charcoal tattoo?
Give me $2,000 and we'll talk.
That's it? Really? You'll do it for that little?
That is a tactic that I've seen people use, both for saying no to commissions and selling their artwork. If there's a piece that they don't want to sell, or if there's something that they don't want to take on, they'll just make the price really, really, really high. And then sometimes people say yes, because sometimes there's a crazy person out there that really, really, really just wants to spend their money on you and your hesitancy. And so you can get a lot of money out of it that will make it comfortable enough for you to do the thing.
Now, Lauren, in terms of what you will and won't do, I know you vet your clients in a way before you even take the gig. You make sure they've seen your work. Why does that matter?
I think that people who are not artists specifically, but even sometimes other artists, have this idea that artists are a block of people and that we all know how to do all the art things, when that's really not the case. We're generally pretty specialized. I mean, you have three different 2D artists here that do completely different things on this stream. So I will say, especially if someone says, hey, can you do a children's book or can you do a logo? I will say, have you looked at my website? And usually that is enough, either for them to stop talking or for them to look and say, oh, wait, this really isn't your thing. It's pretty, I feel like I have a pretty clear persona in my work on my website about what I can do and what I do not do. And if they can't figure that out, that tells me I can just say no and stop it right there.
We have many other streams on our YouTube channel that deal with related topics like business tips and selling your work, turning it into merch. This Google slideshow is available. The link is in the YouTube video description below and also on our main website, artprof.org. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And in a few minutes, Jordan and Lauren will be hanging out in the ArtProf Discord. You can meet them in the post live streams channel. So you can have more talks about nightmare clients and crazy customers, because everybody's got a story, right? Subscribe to our channel so you can continue to grow and develop as an artist. And thank you so much to our top Patreon supporters. You guys, look at how big the list is.
Wow.
It's so big. We're almost done with the third column. About to start a fourth column.
I'm very excited.
Keep it going, guys.
Everybody, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.